What is the No Spin News all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are. And it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
I'm Josh Hammer, and welcome back to America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines for that matter affecting our country and our increasingly beleaguered American way of life. On today's show, our deep dive takes us back into the criminal courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan in New York City. The cross-examination of Stormy Daniels went down yesterday. There were some more motions for a mistrial and to tailor the confines of the unconstitutional gag order placed on the criminal defendant Donald J. Trump. All that and more in today's deep dive after a pretty newsy around the horn segment, if I may say so. And then later on the show in today's closing argument segment as well, Greta Thunberg, remember her? Well, she is now donning the PLO kafia and linking arms with radical Islamists to protest the presence of a Jew in Malmo, Sweden. What a turn that Greta Thunberg has taken there. I've got lots of thoughts on what this says about the so-called red-green alliance, all that and more in today's closing argument segment. But for now, as always, we begin by going around the horn. We begin in Delaware. And the big news non-Trump related yesterday is that we finally had some preliminary action in the Hunter Biden legal sagas. So far, since we've basically launched this show in late January, and we're a few months in now, we have been disproportionately focused on Donald Trump's legal trials, on the four criminal prosecutions against Donald Trump, on the civil fraud case in New York State. There's a defamation case involving E. Jean Carroll. And of course, we always do talk about all the other pertinent legal issues. There's any other number of other major legal questions pertaining to the U.S. Supreme Court, pertaining to the lower courts, pertaining to questions of immigration and national sovereignty and all that. But we really have had a large focus on the Trump legal drama. And certainly that's not going to go away. I don't want to disappoint you or anything. I mean, that's obviously not going to go away. That is continuing to be a focal point of our show for the indefinite future. But it is worth pointing out that the Hunter Biden trials, and there are two of them, are likely going to get started next month. At least that is what is currently scheduled on the legal docket calendar. Now, those two crimes, one are for federal tax charges. That is the prosecution out in California, because it goes back to when Hunter Biden was living in Los Angeles, and the allegations there pertain to all sorts of foreign money coming in from places like Ukraine and China, and his failure to pay taxes and all of this back when Hunter Biden, due to his own admission in his memoir and other works like it, he was leading an extravagant life and paying all this membership, these high fees to belong to these extravagant strip clubs and gentlemen clubs and all of this, and he wasn't really paying his taxes. So that's the case out of California. Then there was action in the other case, the case in Delaware yesterday. This is the gun case. These are federal gun charges there. So if you recall, it was this past September where Hunter Biden was hit with a 3-count indictment from special counsel David Weiss, who is the special counsel assigned to investigate Hunter Biden there. And these are the two charges that the special counsel thus far has been able to come up with. He has not directly touched all the foreign funding stuff, the stuff that has been the subject of Congressman Jim Comer of Kentucky's ire, the head of the Oversight Committee, who has been really trying to investigate a lot of the Biden crime family's foreign connections and all of that. The special counsel, David Weiss, has not touched that, but he has gotten Hunter on tax and gun charges. And these three counts of the gun charge indictment, just to review, involve violations of 18 U.S. Code sections 922 and 924. All of these pertain to the fact that you cannot purchase a firearm when you are a drug user. That is basically what is going on here in all of these counts. So just to kind of give one example here, here is count three of Special Counsel David Weiss's indictment against Hunter Biden. This dropped this past September there. And it reads as follows. It basically says, Hunter Biden, knowing that he was an unlawful user of and addicted to any stimulant, narcotic drug, and or any other controlled substance as defined in U.S. code, he did knowingly possess a firearm, that is a Colt Cobra revolver, and that firearm was shipped and transported in interstate commerce. That is just kind of a snippet of one of the three counts against Hunter Biden. So all that's to say that yesterday we had the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, which is the federal appellate court that is over the district court in Delaware, which is where this gun crime case is going to kick off. You had the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which dismissed Hunter Biden's Hail Mary attempt to simply get this prosecution dismissed in its own right. The three-judge panel at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit said, quote, this appeal is dismissed because the defendant has not shown that the district court's orders are appealable before final judgment. So what they're saying, to kind of cut through the legalese right now, is that you're going to have to go through the motions right now at the district court level. There is nothing that we can do right here at the appellate level. One of the arguments that Hunter Biden is making, and I have always found this just so incredibly delicious because it is so deeply ironic and hypocritical to an extent. One of the arguments that he and his lawyers are going to have to make in this gun case is that these underlying charges here, these underlying charges are actually unconstitutional as a result of the Second Amendment. He's basically going to have to take the NRA full absolutist stance on the Second Amendment. I just find that so incredibly delectable. And I just really can't wait for that case to get started in earnest. I seriously do look forward to covering it day in and day out on America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Moving on from Delaware, I want to just quickly touch base on Nikki Haley, which is a name that you probably have not heard us mention on this show for a while now. Nikki Haley is apparently still debating whether she is actually going to endorse Donald Trump. So there was an article that dropped in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. Here's the headline. Nikki Haley is huddling with donors and won't endorse Donald Trump yet. And the upshot here is that she doesn't really know what she's going to do. I say all that because, as you, the loyal listener, will know by now, one of the things that I like to track on this show is I like to keep tabs of the state of Donald Trump's campaign coffers and see how much money he's pulling in there, who's donating, what billionaires are going to get off the sidelines here. And the very simple reason for that is because Donald Trump needs cash. He needs liquid cash, and he needs cash basically right now because his legal fees are increasingly mounting. His legal fees are increasingly through the roof. And he needs all the help that he can get to just pay those legal fees and pay those lawyers. And that is why Nikki Haley is important, because Nikki Haley has access to a lot of very wealthy donors in the Republican Party orbit, in the broader right of center constellation, more generally speaking. And if he can get her endorsement and get those donors on board, that would actually make a huge difference. This is why some people are still continuing to speculate that Nikki Haley might actually even be Trump's vice presidential pick. I don't see it happening for any number of reasons, but the only reason why she has even an outside shot to possibly get it is simply because she has access to so many billionaire donors, and those donors could be directly helpful for Donald Trump's campaign coffers and his legal fees. But in any event, she's apparently still figuring out what to do. If I were whispering in Nikki Haley's ear, which I certainly am not, I've been quite critical of her in the past, but if I were whispering in her ear, I would say, just do it. I mean, just get off the sideline, just do it. You don't want Joe Biden to be president. Therefore, just endorse the guy that you worked for, I might add. I view this as a very simple and straightforward matter, frankly. Okay, finally, just a brief update in Washington, D.C. from the Biden Department of Homeland Security. This is a DHS that is run by Alejandro Mayorkas, who is a total leftist lunatic who the House impeached, and then they dismissed the charges in an extraordinarily scornful fashion, you might say, in the U.S. Senate. But the DHS is run by a current total leftist. And that is why, actually, I find it deeply interesting that yesterday, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security actually published a notice of proposed rulemaking that would essentially allow statutory bars to asylum to be applied much earlier in the process. So it's basically a DHS rule that is now open to public comment. That's how the Administrative State rulemaking apparatus works under the APA, the Administrative Procedure Act, a statute that goes back to the 1940s or so. But I find it very interesting that in an election year, even the Mayorkas-led DHS is actually feeling the need, politically apparently, to publish a rule that would actually tighten asylum. To me, that is just absolutely fascinating. It says all you need to know about where the asylum debate and where the immigration debate overall is right now in these United States. I thought that headline was just absolutely fascinating. But that's it for today's Around the Horn segment. Up next in today's deep dive, we're going to go back to the New York City criminal trial, the hush money case. Lots to update you on there. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Mike Slater from the podcast Politics by Faith. This is a crazy time in our country. It's stressful, a lot of anxiety, and it's going to get worse. And I realized that one of the things that helps me take away the stress is realizing that there's nothing new under the sun. So on this podcast, we take the news of the day and we run it through the Bible and other periods in history to realize that we've been through this before and we can rise above again. Politics by Faith, anywhere you listen to the podcast, Politics by Faith.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. So Stormy Daniels was back on the witness stand yesterday. She was interrogated with some fairly intense and rigorous cross-examination. Trump's lawyers were basically trying to sow the seeds of some doubt into her story about how she was so terrified during this alleged 2006 sexual encounter. I mean, you're a freaking porn star, for goodness sake. What exactly is so scary about then getting in bed with a very big and well-known and prominent and famous man, that man being, of course, Donald Trump? So there was a lot of that sort of cross-examination happening yesterday. And all of that does just raise the questions as to what exactly is going on here. But after this cross-examination and after Stormy Daniels' continued testimony, and she just has continued to provide extraordinarily lurid, extraordinarily extravagant detail about their alleged 2006 sexual encounter and so forth there. After this, Trump's legal team actually then made two additional motions after Stormy Daniels' testimony concluded yesterday. One is that they formally moved again for a mistrial on the grounds that Stormy Daniels' testimony will unduly prejudice the jury against the criminal defendant, Donald Trump. And then additionally, they made another motion to tailor down and to narrow the confines of the gag order that is currently being placed against Donald Trump. This is a gag order that, as it currently stands, prohibits him from criticizing literally anyone, other than the judge himself, Juan Merchan, and the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg. That is an extraordinary gag order. That gag order right now prevents him from criticizing any of the jurors, prevents him from criticizing the judge's daughter, Lauren Merchan, who was involved in raising tens and tens of millions of dollars for Democratic candidates, largely based on the fact that her daddy might become the first person to incarcerate a former president of the United States. That gag order, as it currently stands, prohibits him from criticizing any of the additional prosecutors, such as Matthew Colangelo, the former high-ranking Biden Department of Justice official, who curiously, towards the end of 2022, just a few months before Alvin Bragg's indictments dropped, that was when Colangelo left the Biden DOJ to join Alvin Bragg's not-so-merry band of prosecutors there in Manhattan. So they moved again to narrow the confines of this gag order, and the judge, still Juan Merchan, is just not having it. He is continuing to deny and continuing to reject lots of these motions. Now, I do think, based on my synopsis and my reading what happened in court yesterday, I do think that Trump's attorneys were able to land some punches. They did land some punches to get at the integrity and the credibility of Stormy Daniels as a possible witness. Now, we're all kind of gearing up at this point to see when Michael Cohen, another witness who has some serious integrity and credibility issues, someone who, by the way, happens to be a convicted felon, we're all waiting to see when that's going to happen and if the Trump legal team can land a lot of punches there as well. I think it is worth just reiterating here as well that what you're seeing in the New York case, what you are seeing at this point in the New York case, is the Democrat lawfare complex is forced to go all in here. All the other cases are going belly up. The Florida case was indefinitely postponed, the trial start date this week, by the judge, Aileen Cannon. No one knows exactly when that's going to start. The Georgia case, the Georgia Court of Appeals, sitting above Judge Scott McAfee there, just agreed to hear this, the appeal of this remedy from McAfee as to whether Fannie Willis can actually stay on the case or not. There is virtually no chance the Georgia case is now going to reach a jury this year, let alone before November, before the election. That is the case that many of us once upon a time thought was going to be the most potentially damaging and dangerous for Donald Trump, and virtually no chance that any of that is going to make it to a jury really at all anytime soon. And then the DC case, the crown jewel case of the Democrat lawfare complex, is really held up right now by the U.S. Supreme Court. That immunity decision will come down sometime around the end of June, but it's ultimately going to get kicked down in all likelihood to the district court judge. It'll work its way up and down the system from there. So a lot of legalese breaking it all down for you. Long story short, the New York case is their only shot. That's their only shot. And really what they're doing here is they're not so much making a legal argument, because the legal argument is absolutely farcical, as we've explained on this show many times. Absolutely farcical in it there. What they're doing is they are trying to relitigate the 2016 election out in the open as an attempt to basically, I think, if I'm trying to put on my armchair psychology hat, trying to expiate their sins, so to speak, trying to atone for their sins for letting, in their own perception, from their own vantage point, letting Donald Trump win the election in 2016 over their beloved Hillary Clinton, and for letting the so-called Russian interference, the so-called Russian collusion, take place out in the open. Now, that's obviously not what happened. The Russia collusion delusion is an insane story. But I do think that is what is actually happening here. Now, I want to just read for you an excerpt, because I actually wrote my syndicated column today, which you can find available at Newsweek, which is where I primarily work, or any number of other right of center publications. The title of my column today is The Making of a Banana Republic. And it is about this case in New York City. I want to just read for you the conclusion that I reached here, which is basically saying, hey, have Democrats fully thought this through? I do not think that they have thought this through. Here is how I ended my column, say, the final 2 to 3 paragraphs or so. Quote, instead of permitting the Biden regime's challenger, Trump, to campaign for votes in Wisconsin, he is forced to silently endure the unhinged courtroom musings of a literal porn star and a convicted felon, Michael Cohen, all in furtherance of a case that suffers from insuperable statute of limitations problems, in addition to the structural absurdity of a local DA, the Soros-funded Alvin Bragg, prosecuting and attempting to prove a federal crime, campaign finance violation. Oh, and if Trump doesn't shut up and keep quiet, Mershon might throw him in jail, as he has repeatedly threatened to do if Trump keeps violating his unconstitutional gag order. What a sick, cruel joke it all is. Democrats seem not to have given any thought to what happens if they lose, an entirely distinct possibility. Given the incumbent's poor swing state polling and widespread malaise among the electorate, if Trump wins, do Democrats seriously not expect him to respond in kind? Now that the Rubicon has been crossed and we have entered a world in which politicians attempt to not merely defeat their opposition at the ballot box, but also prosecute and incarcerate them, there is no going back. Just as Senate Democrats' November 2013 invocation of the nuclear option to end the filibuster for lower court nominees directly led to Republicans doing the same for Supreme Court nominees just a few years later, so too is it impossible to know what may ultimately come from the lawfare precedent Democrats are setting today. The new rules have been established. Many of us didn't want these rules, but here we are anyway. So game on. And that's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, Greta Thunberg is back at it. The Red-Green Alliance is fully alive. What do I mean by it? Well, I'll explain it all for you when we come back. Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. Greta Thunberg, remember her? The girl who was promoted by the World Economic Forum and the UN and the whole Davos sway, the whole Davos ruling class, the environmentalists, the crazy global warming, climate change fanatics. Greta Thunberg, maybe you haven't noticed, has become not just an environmentalist greenie fanatic. She's become a full-on leftist radical, which obviously makes a great deal of sense when you consider that she is a very young, impressionable young person who became a quasi-celebrity at a fairly young age. And when you start going down the leftist rabbit hole, it's unclear at best where you're going to stop. Yesterday, there was just this horrifying scene in Malmo, Sweden, which is a town in Sweden that has been completely overrun by radical Muslims who have moved there, oftentimes from Syria, many from Afghanistan, some from Northern Africa. Malmo has been the site of any number of firebombings of synagogues and attacks on local Jews, some attacks even on local Christians. Malmo, Sweden is kind of ground zero of what the European continent has done to itself via unfettered, unvetted mass immigration from the Islamic world. It is really sad, and in many ways is frankly terrifying. There was this throng of well over 1,000 people waving the PLO flag there in Malmo, Sweden yesterday. Why were they there? Because that is where the Eurovision tournament, I don't really know a whole lot about Eurovision. This is, it's basically their American Idol. It's like a singing contest for like amateur singers. You go, you try to sing, you win a prize or something like that. I don't know. I don't particularly really care, to be honest with you. But the Eurovision was taking place yesterday in Malmo, Sweden, and you had over 1,000 people out there waving the PLO flag, wearing the terrorist symbol, the kafia, which is made popular by the arch terrorist Yasser Arafat. It is a symbol of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism and anti-Western civilization hatred, for that matter. So they're all out there waving the flag. Why are they doing that? Well, they're doing that because an Israeli girl was there to compete in Eurovision, and she actually ended up winning. She's competing in the final. So God bless and good luck in the final. That's great. Good for you. Greta Thunberg was out there joining a protest. I mean, literally protesting the presence of a Jew in Sweden. I mean, Nazi-esque stuff. Truly Nazi-esque stuff, but apparently that's what it means to be a progressive these days. This is the so-called red-green alliance at work, the so-called communist Islamo-fascist alliance. It doesn't really make a heck of a lot of sense other than pure intersectional terms, but if you go back and you think about it during World War II, Hitler was actually a close ally of the Grand Mufti, the infamous Jew-hating fanatic there, who was the so-called Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. He was one of the masterminds of the Hebron massacre of the late 1920s. There was precedent for this. There was precedent for radical Islamists and radical lunatics on either the extreme left or, I guess, extreme right, depends how you want to classify the Nazis. But there is precedent for this sort of alliance there. And it's just so appalling. Greta Thunberg, what a monstrous and horrifically unserious person you have become. That's it for today's episode of America on Trial with Josh Hammer. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We'll be back with you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll be right back.